This is the Total Tuscany Podcast, episode 95.
So when you sit down, you know, you get the menu and it says, let us take you on a journey of cheese. And you can choose, do you want three, do you want six cheeses, you know, anything in between. You can say, I don't like blue cheese, I don't like goat cheese. Those are the most common. But, you know, you can say what you don't want. But then from there, we're going to take you on a cheese journey.
Rebecca Christofferson loves cheese and she loves wine. During COVID, Rebecca and her husband, Pierre, came up with the idea to open a wine and cheese shop in Florence. And just like that, Formaggio Teca Tuar was born. It's already been voted the best cheese shop in Italy. We've been there ourselves. It's magnificent. But there's so much more to Rebecca's story, and she shares it all with you on this edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice. My co-host is Mr. Pat Capagna, and we just got back from Italy as we record this on March 30th, about 2 weeks ago. And Pat, we didn't bring our wives. It was just you and me and in Florence. It was wonderful.
And our group. And
we brought a little group, but we never spent much time with them, which was, and they loved it. And I thought it was good for them because we had everything set up for them, just checked in on a daily basis to make sure everything was going well. And I saw her the other day and she goes, that was one of the top five trips I've ever taken.
Well, that's saying something because our guest was a very, very well-traveled person.
Yeah, very, very much so. So if you're interested in learning more about our experiences or just getting a little bit more advice or we can point you in the right direction, you can always reach out to us at totaltuscany@gmail.com. That's totaltuscany@gmail.com. And if you don't follow us on the socials, we have a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page. So follow us there as well. One of the experiences we did, we went down to Bulgari with Claudia Caligari, who's been on the podcast a couple times, and that was really our first venture into Bulgari. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
It was we had a week,
yeah,
and I think we had three major surprises. Bulgari was one of them.
Yes,
the train ride down along the coast from Pisa south is beautiful. Claudia was a fabulous hostess, but that region is really cool.
I would say this, in just full disclosure, if you're going to go to Bulgari, you either have to do one of two things, and that is you have to rent a car and drive to Bulgari, or you have to have a private driver, because you could train to some of these towns, but you're going to be just stuck in one town. So you either have to have a car or you have to have a driver.
Yeah.
And we were lucky that Claudia drove us around, so we had a driver, but you probably need a car if you're going to go down there.
Yeah, we were lucky because we got to look around. When we have a car and our wives and guests were usually driving, yeah, you were paying attention to the road. Yeah. The second surprise was just the whole region of Bulgari, and we met some really cool people.
Well, Bruna, who's been on she was on, I think, two or three podcasts ago when we talked about her yoga retreat and her estate or place where you can go just get away, get off the grid. Mm-hmm. And in person, that place was amazing.
It's amazing. And Bruna was like, I don't know about you, but it was like, I knew her already. She was somebody that very familiar, very beautiful place, very welcoming people. And then the third surprise,
and that was La Guardia Vecchia, which is actually episode number 94, if you want to check that out.
If you haven't listened. And La Guardia Vecchia, that's a beautiful, it's like a yoga retreat high up, off the grid, and you can see forever.
Yep.
Third surprise, I don't know about you, but I would say cheese.
Absolutely cheese. And again, this is what this podcast has been fun. And it's so fun to talk to the people we've interviewed, say, hey, somebody heard your podcast, they came to visit us. That means a lot to me, because that means people are getting their experiences and going, okay, that's somebody I want to connect with. Well, when we do this podcast, people we talk to also make connections. So we talked to Kika, who did the cooking in Tuscany class, mm-hmm, and Kika connected us with Rebecca. And she has a wonderful cheese shop in Florence, but then we've learned so much more about Rebecca. And if you're a TV watcher, she's on TV right now, in Fixer to Fabulous Italiano.
And we had no idea. Walking into her cheese shop, we had no idea that that was in the works. But yeah, Fixer to Fabulous, you'll see her firsthand, and you'll get little glimpses, cameos of the cheese shop that we're talking about.
Formaggio Teca Terroir.
If we're pronouncing that properly.
I don't even try to do the pronunciation. Phonetically, that's what it says to me, right?
I just know you and I, over the last 15 years, we've had a lot of cheese in Italy.
Yes. Right?
This cheese shop was off the charts. But truth is, we didn't pick any of it. She brought it out. We had no idea. And from the first bite, it was like, oh, amazing.
So you're going to learn a lot in this podcast. You're going to learn about Fixer to Fabulous. You're going to learn about cheese. And then also the wine tours they do throughout Tuscany. So welcome, Rebecca Christofferson, to the Total Tuscany Podcast. Rebecca, it's so great to talk to you again. It just feels like we were together in your cheese shop, and that was a memorable day, and it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, it was really, really lovely to meet you guys before we had this talk.
Let's start with, we're going to talk a lot about cheese, we're going to talk a lot about wine, but I have to start, because Pat and I have both started watching Fixer to Fabulous, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, I'm through two episodes, Pat's through three. Just my personal feel. I'm stressed out. I am so stressed out watching the first two episodes. Were you? How much is acting, and how much were you stressed out during this process?
Okay, so I'm the calm person in the couple, so I have to speak for my husband Pierre, who's not here. He's actually just gone to France this morning with our sons. His grandmother is 100 years old, and so he's got this Easter thing, so he can't speak for himself. But he was super stressed out because he's the guy who's responsible for the economic situation of the family. Whereas I was like, well, you know, I'm sort of the more calm person, I guess. And I'm just like, and I've been here for longer in Italy, in Tuscany, in Florence, and I'm used to how slow things can get. And, you know, they were less surprising to me, but they were very, very, very stressful to Peter, my husband. And he was the one who was freaking out all the time. And I was just like, calm down. It's okay. You know, this is not just the show. It's just a house. So yeah, I guess, you know, for the purpose of drama, certainly the stress was put on the show quite a lot. But it's also kind of true. It's totally true. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Without spoiling the end, the last few episodes, what was the biggest surprise the two of you encountered through the first three episodes?
So the hugest amount of stress was actually the cheese, because Pierre had this dream, lifelong dream. And it's not just a dream. It's more like a sort of family legacy, sort of like living up to expectations, but his own, not his family's. Nobody was like saying, oh, you got to make a cheese. But he really, really wanted to prove it to himself and the world that he could do that. And the fact is that if you don't get the milk in-house on time, then you have to wait for 4 or 5 months because the animals are having their little babies and you won't get any milk because you can't take it from the little babies, can you? So that was a true stress. Plus, and this wasn't even like featured on the show, we didn't have any electricity. We didn't have enough electricity to keep that cheese cellar going at the right temperature. So we had this huge generator right outside the window where I'm sitting right now. And it was, you know, every 12 hours you had to go and feed the generator with whatever gas they put into it. Evidently, I didn't do that. and it was like, it was stinky. It was noisy. It was horrible. But we had to do it for that cheese batch because he just needed to get it done. So, yeah, that was definitely the most stressful part for me, and especially for him.
The most stressful part for me was when the couple who's doing the renovation, who are personal friends of yours, and we'll get into that story a little bit later on, was when they showed up. And, you know, when they're in the United States, he's the contractor, he's the builder, he does all this. And when I got there, when I started watching, he's like, well, we have to hire the contractor and hire the architect here and rely on them. I'm like, oh, you don't know how this is going to go. Was that acting, or did they really not how that was going to go? Because having been there so many times and watched our own friends go through renovations, it's a lengthy process and a bureaucratic process. Were they really not aware of what they were going to face?
Well, no, because, you know, we were the ones. So how this goes down, and I don't know if you want to get into this.
Absolutely. We have as much time as you want.
Okay. So how it goes down is that, you know, I guess in the States it's very different, but because we're here and permitting and whatnot, so we were the ones who had to sort of like, you know, suggest we would like to work with this architect, this contractor. And we had a lot of discussions about that the first couple of months. And I guess we also wasted a bit of time on that because we were the ones who, you know, have to pay for it. And so in terms of Jenny and Dave, they were just happy to work with whoever we were happy to work with. It is very true that you don't know the timings. They tell you, they say, could be a month, it could be two, it could be three. And you're like, okay, that's like a huge span of time when you really want to get something done, especially when there's a TV team on it, because they want to obviously understand how long and how much it's going to cost them. So it's not acting. It's totally, totally true. But of course, I think on the show, perhaps it's like repeated a lot of times so that people who don't know how things work here will certainly understand. It's just underlined.
What I noticed, Rebecca, was that it didn't look like acting. These are really good friends of yours, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain to the listeners who may not have watched the show yet how that all came down?
Sure. Yeah. So funny enough, we met, I meet a lot of people doing what I do because I do what I do all the time. Kind of like you, I guess. So I started doing wine tours back in 2004, and it was sort of out of passion. I love wine. I've been working with wine already. And I thought there was this need to show people, you know, the true side of wine in Tuscany. And by saying that, I don't mean like I have a truth that nobody else has. I just didn't want to show people that's Frisbee in the background.
And Frisbee is featured in the show a lot, by the way.
Yes, he's famous. And so I wanted to take people to places like real wineries where they could meet the producer, something that totally exists now, but back then was kind of a novelty. And in doing that, I got to meet a lot of people. I always kept it small group because I love to meet people and connect with them. And this leads me to how I met Jenny and Dave. They were on one of their first trips together as a couple. It was either their honeymoon or one of the trips that they did just after they got married. And we connected and had a great day. They're very friendly people, just like they're real people, just like on the show. And we kept in contact over the years. They kept coming back. They loved Tuscany. They wanted to have a connection with their now they have all these kids, 5 kids. They wanted them to have a connection outside of the U.S. that could benefit them as a family and the kids as well. And also one of their kids, Sylvie, is adopted from Africa. And so I think more so even they want them to have a connection, which is a bit more worldwide. Did I answer that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's great how it came together. And you said something earlier that you had, I think a lot of people, especially in the States, think when they do these fixer-uppers that maybe the show pays for it. But that's not the case. You were on the hook for the budget on this, right?
You are. I mean, I am. We are. Pierre is for certain. That's what he told me. Yes. Yes, you are. I think it depends a little bit on what kind of show it is. And of course, there could be small perks in terms of discounts on certain things that they want to put into the show. But you still get, I mean, in our case, we still got to choose. And we, you know, we said to them, well, we don't really like that, even though we're getting a discount on it. We don't want it. And other things that we really insisted on because we knew they were local and we knew that that is what we wanted. Because in, you know, to start off with, this renovation was planned before the show even happened. It was sort of like an added bonus in terms of documentation and, of course, in publicity, because, of course, so many people seeing it is fantastic for us.
So with it, with the first three episodes that have aired in the United States so far, have you started seeing the rewards of the show? Are people calling? Is your farm getting booked and people staying there?
So we got our first booking in September, which is great. We are, yeah. I mean, this is a villa, and so in order to stay here, we have a certain amount of criteria. It's not like we don't want anybody to come here, but it's our business farm and we want to enjoy it ourselves as well. So we don't want people to come for a night. People have to come for at least 5 nights and they have to rent the whole villa. And so, of course, that reduces enormously the amount of potential clients. But we don't have any problem with that because we're also using it for tastings. We're aging the cheese here. I'm here right now. So it's sort of like a tool to enhance our other businesses. So grape tours for the wine tours and Formaggioteca for the cheese shop in Florence.
How far out of Florence is the villa?
We're only about like 33 minutes. When I drive, at least 25 when Pierre drives.
Pretty close to Grève, is that right?
Yeah, so it's in the comune of Grève, but Grève is a very hilly countryside. I don't know if you've been. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. you have. Mm-hmm. And, it's very hilly. So it's kind of like, as the bird flies, I'm like looking at Grève, but there's like a couple of hills in between. So it actually takes me about 20 minutes to get to Grève, whereas if I were flying, it would take me 4.
See, one of my big regrets now is that you offered, because I hadn't seen the show because it hadn't started airing when we were together a couple of weeks ago. And now you offered to take us out there. And I'm like, no, let's just meet at the cheese shop, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But
and now you're like, oh my God. Like,
why didn't I take her up on this offer? I feel bad for doing that. But see, you've given me motivation to come back, and my wife and I will be back in December. Pat's always invited to come with my wife and I don't know if he'll take us up on it, but in December, I want to visit the farm. I want to visit.
You are coming. You have no choice.
Exactly. You know, Pat and I have always talked about purchasing property in Italy and Tuscany specifically. Watching the renovation, I'm out. I'm not going to do it. I'm not renovating a property. It would be too hard to do it living in the United States and relying on somebody else. So thank you for talking me totally out of buying property and renovating.
Well, renovating, right?
Yeah, renovating.
Renovating.
Yeah, too much. So where we sat down, where we had a conversation, was your wine and cheese shop. And I just was on a call the other night with a couple from Detroit that's going to Tuscany, and they're staying right on the Arno. And I said, the first place you have to go is, and how do you pronounce it? Because I'm horrible with pronunciation. So.
Don't worry. So it's a composed word. It doesn't really exist in the Italian vocabulary, but I would love to think that it does now. So it's formaggio, which is cheese, and Enoteca, which is a wine shop. And so we put it together to Formaggioteca. And then in addition to that, we called it Terroir because of my husband, who's French, he's a winemaker. And terroir is the word that you use most commonly in French to describe something that comes specifically from one little area and is a special because of the area it comes from, and it can't be replicated. And the same goes for cheese, we feel. So you have all these varieties of cheese, like hundreds and hundreds, even in the state. Like, I'm in love with cheese from all over the world, and wine. Let's not, you know, take that away. And so we thought that would be a neat word to sort of like combine our passion for wine and cheese, and the storytelling that goes beyond just eating the cheese and the wine, and to tell people about where things come from and how they end up being unique.
I tell you what, every time I go to Italy, my life changes in some way. You blew my mind away with the cheese. I've had cheese. Pat, you've had a lot of cheese. When you set that first plate down.
Well, we looked at each other and said, this is life changing.
You changed our lives.
Oh, you did say that. That was so cute. I remember that.
And then it's like, in this way I interpret it, it's probably, is that once you got to know us and trust us and we had this nice conversation, you brought out one more plate. You're like, okay, these guys are worth one more plate. And you brought out this incredible blue cheese. And I can't thank you enough. And that's why I want people to understand that if they cross the Arno and just walk down, what is it, the second bridge down from the Ponte Vecchio, your shop is absolutely one of the most newest treasures in Florence that they need to experience. But what I find interesting is it's not that old. You started this during COVID. You're like, okay, the city shut down. Let's do something new, which is, it's almost the American entrepreneur in you, right? I mean, it's very, that was pretty aggressive at a time when everything was shut down.
It was, yeah. It was, well, it was also, you know, it was totally out of necessity somehow to like occupy, is it more your mind? I mean, I guess we could have just frozen economically and say, okay, we'll just eat rice and pasta until the end of this. But you know, I think when you do, like when you are an entrepreneur and when you do what you do, you don't just do it to make money. You do it because you love doing it. You love getting up every morning and thinking, I have a purpose today, or, you know, I'm going to see people smile. And that just didn't happen during COVID for us, because being solely dependent on tourism, we had zero business. So it was a combination of factors. And it was also a combination of our pasts, you know, Pierre coming from a farm in France where they make Roquefort, which is a famous French cheese. For those of you who haven't tried it, you must try it. It's fantastic. And me coming from the restaurant business prior to starting to do wine tours, we just sort of combined those things and it was natural to us. And we had a lot of fights because he didn't want a restaurant and I didn't want a cheese shop. So at the end of the day, I think we both got what we wanted and also not. But, you know, those kind of situations make you think and feel differently. Does that make sense to you?
What I hear is the sign of a good, healthy, happy marriage: compromise.
That's right.
What's been the response? Was it busy from day one, or are people just now getting word of mouth? And I'm sure the show is going to help tremendously as well.
I think so. I mean, we've already had the first people come in and say, "Hey, I've seen you, you know, on TV," which is really cute. So I'm really happy about that, because it's not easy to have a business like this in Florence. Florence is a fair enough a city, and it's a city that has, of course, Florentines in them and in it. And we're very lucky that the Florentines have been very generous towards us and love us enough to keep us busy year long. But then we have moments of the year that are not busy with locals, like summer period, because the locals all immigrate to the seaside or to the mountains to seek fresh air and just enjoy their lives, la dolce vita. And those are the moments that we rely on tourism. And so it is always a little bit up and down. But I would say that generally speaking, we've been very well, received by locals, which was our intent. Our main intent was, let's have a different business in case, there's another knock on wood, another COVID session or whatever, we need something that is not reliant on international business. So that's, yeah. And so, yeah, we got the cheese award. We got a local cheese award, like gastronomy award for local gastronomies in Florence. And then we got the cheese bar award for all of Italy in November of 2023. So that was a huge accomplishment after only 3 years. So we're really happy.
It was absolutely, you were so gracious hosting Travis and I. So we feel privileged. You sat down with us and you brought out, as Travis said, you brought two plates out and the wine was amazing. What would our listeners expect to encounter when they walk into your cheese shop? Does someone actually help them and say, try this cheese and try that wine, not knowing anything about what you're offering?
Absolutely. So I think what we, like, even when I'm not there right now, right, because I'm talking to you. And so what we try to do, we have a great staff, and they all speak English, and they're all super knowledgeable about the subject, because most of them have been with us from the very beginning. And so when you sit down, you know, you get the menu, and it says, let us take you on a journey of cheese. And you can choose, do you want three, do you want six cheeses, you know, anything in between. You can say, I don't like blue cheese, I don't like goat cheese. Those are the most common. But, you know, you can say what you don't want. But then from there, we're going to take you on a cheese journey. And we'll also advise you on the kind of wine that you might want to, you know, try with those cheeses. So I think it's a little bit like an experience, but of course it's also just for people who are a little bit hungry and want to try special cheeses. So we try and keep it, you know, have a lot of like special things.
And you pair it with fruit and nuts and it's, oh, yeah. I call it experience. You know, I'm on your website right now and you'd have experiences. To me, life is an experience, and sitting in a cheese shop, trying stuff that you've never had before, that's an experience. And that's one thing that's going to stick with me a long time. You know, we can collect things, but I have my time with you and in your shop that will last a lifetime for me, which is,
exactly.
Yeah. And
you guys coming from a different part of the world, you're going to have different experiences and different cheeses that are available to you. Here in Europe, we have a lot of raw milk cheeses. That's kind of interesting to try, unless of course you're pregnant, then you have to be a bit careful, but those are experiences that you might want to like try when you're here. And if you don't know about it, then of course you might not do it. So.
It was more than just the cheese and the wine, though. You described, I don't remember how to pronounce the word, Rebecca, but I'll make a stab at it. You said something like hygge, or there was a word that you described, mm-hmm. the environment or the culture that you were trying to create in your shop. Can you just tell that? I was so amazed when you described that to me.
I think we talked about terroir, didn't we?
It was something about a warm environment from, it was a Danish
great.
Word.
Now you're going back to my origins. Yes. Yeah, because when you said hygge, it reminded me of the MGA or the UGA, which is a specific area of a terroir in the wine world in Italy. So that's also something. But yeah, what I told you about was hygge. And hygge, well, so I'm Danish in origin. So hygge is this very, very magical term. I wouldn't just say word, because it embraces this sort of whole wholesomeness of being together with people that are like-minded and who want to have a nice time and who want to enjoy a warm environment and transmit good vibes to each other. That's, to me, that's what hygge is. And I tried to recreate that at the cheese and wine shop.
Well, you didn't try to recreate it. You created it. Okay. I just want you created it. Hell, you know, I'm not a cheese expert. All I know is I like cheese, but when people travel to Tuscany, they need to understand that, you know, most of the food they eat is seasonal, right? Are cheeses seasonal? Are there different types of the time of the year where different cheeses come out?
Absolutely. Because of course, again, the you know, the cycle of the milk that is available and also the characteristics of that milk. So in spring, so right now, as we're talking, the animals are eating fresh grass, they're outside, they're roaming, and the milk will reflect that both in taste and in, you know, in character. So that will definitely show in the kind of cheese that you get. That's why in the summer you get fantastic Alpine cheeses from the north of Italy, from the mountains, where the cattle is like grazing up in, I don't know how many feet that would be, but it's over like 1,500 meters, 2,000 meters, like really high up. Whereas in Tuscany, we don't have as many. So Tuscany is more about sheep. So the sheep cycle is basically from December, January, and then until July is when you get some milk. The best milk is right now. It's more abundant. That's because we're eating the Easter lamb tomorrow. So there's extra milk for us. Oh, that's horrible. But it's the way it is.
Exactly.
And goat milk, the same. I mean, the first goat milk is coming on the market, right? Like the cheeses are coming right now after Easter.
So a big part of the Fixer to Fabulous was your cheese barn. Are you now selling your own cheese in your cheese shop? And do you highlight that in your cheese shop?
So we don't.
Really?
That surprises
not
me.
Not yet. So Pierre is a perfectionist. And he was happy with his first batches. He made two separate batches in July. He was happy with them, but he's not at the point where he's like, okay, I'm ready to put this, you know, signature cheese on the market quite yet. We still have it in the cellar. We're tasting it. We're doing different things. Like when you age cheese, there's several different parameters. It is even more complex than winemaking because each parameter, like humidity, temperature, and we're talking like minimal details. There's one batch, for example, that we've put in under a spirit. Not like a holy spirit, just a spirit made out of iris. So this valley that we're in is called San Polo in Chianti, and it's famous for irises, you know, the flowers. Mm-hmm. There's this spirit or liqueur that has been made out of irises, and we've put that together with some of the cheese. So we'll see how it ages. But we're expecting it to be, if it's not out on the market, we'll eat it all ourselves or have people taste it. You know, when it's ready, when we feel that we have a true identity of this cheese, we'll put it on the market.
You know, I mean, if you want to send some to the United States and if you need a separate palate to try it, we'd be more than happy to do that, right? I mean, we're offering our palates up. Speaking of ordering online, on your website, you say you can order online. Can you order cheese online and does it ship to the United States?
We would have loved that. It's really hard with the shipping. So we haven't done it yet. And we're looking into options. It's just so risky because of the parameters that we cannot control that are the temperature and the time. And so we're very nervous about that. So we have declined that. But we do ship wine. We do ship olive oil that we make on the property. So hopefully, you know, those things will make up for it and people can come here and taste the cheese.
You know, besides the cheese shop, your business started with grape tours. Is that a business that's still flourishing, and are you still doing that? Because you started off the show talking about how you had a fleet of vans, a fleet of tour guides, and in a day they were gone, right? I mean, yes. has that business built back up to where you want it?
Yes, it has indeed. We're back. The show doesn't say that, so I've had a lot of concerned messages saying, oh my God, you know, we're so sad that your business died. It didn't. It went dormant. And we're totally back. We've got people out right now. In fact, I just got a message from one of my guides. Yes, we have multiple tours going out of Florence every day. They're day trips. And we go to Chianti Classico. We go to Montalcino, Montepulciano, San Gimignano, Bolgheri, all of the, you know, major wine regions. And so we do that every day. And we have many a day. And yes, they're back.
That's good. That's good. And you know, and during our time there, and I was there in December and Pat and I were there a couple of weeks ago, it seems like nothing's changed. And what I mean by that, I know it was dormant for a long time, but it just seems so vibrant and everybody's back again. Would you agree? Is it to the numbers that it was pre-COVID?
I'm afraid so. I mean, I didn't want to say that in a negative sense.
No, and I know what you mean.
But, you know, we've had this you know, all this talk about over-tourism and stuff in certain areas like Venice, Florence, and Rome, especially, I guess, Venice and Florence, because they're really small cities. And so you do feel, you know, the masses of people that are just pouring in. And it's hard to handle for the locals, for the economy, for the infrastructure and everything. But yes, I mean, on the other hand, Florence and Venice, without the tourists, we know how it is. They don't, you know, survive. So we need them. And I do think we're back to pre-COVID conditions. And hopefully somehow COVID did give us a little bit of a learning in how to handle that better as we go forwards.
What's next, Rebecca? You've got this Formaggiateca in Florence. You live, what, 30 minutes outside of Florence. You're doing the tours. You're housing guests. I don't know, 3-bedroom, right, in the villa?
Correct.
I don't know how you're managing all of that, but my guess is you've got something else planned. What's the next thing on the radar?
I'd like to take a vacation.
We'll host you in the United States. You come here, we'll put you on a farm. We'll put you on a patch farm. We'll host you here in the States.
Well, actually, we do have a little plan, but it's nothing big. So, of course, Fixer to Fabulous is an awesome way to get our information out there. I have this little dream of doing a cooking show. I'm not a cook, so I'm not going to be cooking. But I've always been involved with high quality food and wine and people. And so if everything goes as planned, in May, we're going to come out with something called What's Cooking at Campo Sasso. And it's going to be hosting. So we're going to hire a proper, you know, video team and stuff. And we're going to be hosting different chefs and people that we know from around Tuscany and then eventually from around Italy, I hope, to come here at Campo Sasso and cook up a recipe with cheese and tell their story. I like to, you know, my whole thing is to tell people's story, not mine really. Today's kind of one of the first. So I would love to do that. And hopefully it's going to be coming out on our YouTube in May.
Sign us up. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So on all the social medias, so you mentioned you have a YouTube page. Where can people find you on the social medias?
Okay. So YouTube is Life is Grape in Tuscany, like grape, right? Then we have several different Instagrams. One is for grape tours. So that's grape tours. Formaggiateca has its own. Campo Sasso has its own. And what else? You know, we're on Facebook and stuff, but I think that's about it.
Well, you are busy almost 24 hours a day, aren't you? From the socials to working to doing all this, you do need a little vacation.
I mean, yeah, the brain is always like going, but without going too high. You know, it's always there. There's always, you know, you're always thinking about the next opportunity to tell your story, but without like, we're not very social media people, so it's kind of hard for us too. So I'm happy the show did it for us.
It's so much to talk about and so many great stories, and I'm so happy that you were able to share them with us, and I'm so glad we've met in person and we're able to meet again today, because you're a wonderful person. You run a wonderful business, and I cannot recommend enough for people to listen to this podcast. When you go to Florence, when you go to Tuscany, Rebecca's is just one in a million.
And it's an absolute, it's a must.
Yes, it's a must.
Well, I am waiting for you in December. You're going to have to come to Campo Sasso. I'm going to have to show you the cheese cellar. It's amazing. And we're going to do, you know, a lunch or a dinner, because that's what life is all about.
It really, eating, drinking, and just sitting and talking, you're right. That is what life's
spending
all about.
Time with friends.
And it's ironic that we're talking today. We're talking the day before Easter. It was 15 years ago that Pat and I took our families to Tuscany for the very first time. So we're celebrating our 15th anniversary to Tuscany, which started us down this podcasting journey, which we've been doing for about 8 or 9 years now. It's crazy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we were podcasting before people even knew what podcasts were.
Well, Well, you know what? It's so funny. Before I met you and before, you know, we even got to meet, thanks to Kika in Bulgaria, I had been listening to you for years already. So isn't that
you're
funny?
You're just saying that.
No. I'm seriously. Like my husband said the other day, he said, what are you doing? I said, yeah, I'm doing this. Like we're talking, you know, we're doing a podcast. He goes, who even listens to that? And I'm like, I do.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. It's interesting. Besides the United States, it's fun to look at the analytics, right? I get into the data and I start. Australians love this podcast. It's either Americans or it's Australians. I find that very, very interesting. But
And people who live in Italy, for sure.
Well, I always wonder if people live in Italy, they listen to it. These guys are clueless. Yeah, they have no idea what they're talking about.
No, you're courageous. That's all.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, the good thing is we don't get on and just talk one-on-one. We like to have people on from Tuscany and help promote business, because I think that's the big thing. If we can promote experiences, promote businesses, that's what we're here for. And just to tell stories. And your story has been absolutely wonderful. And we cannot thank you enough for the time that you've given us today.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you so much. You're so sweet, you guys. Pat, thank you for coming to the cheese shop.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to cry soon, so stop this.
Well, thank you so much, and we will have you again on the podcast. There's going to be more stories to tell, and we can't wait to tell them and have you back on.
Fabulous.
I can't wait to go back.
Well, I'm going back because she has this open invitation for us, right? She has an open invitation. And if you're wondering where to find the cheese shop, just go to the description on the podcast page, and we have the web links there. So you won't regret it. It's really close to the Arno. It's a quaint little shop, and it just has so much wine, has so much cheese. You won't be disappointed.
No, it's... we've only been back 2 weeks, and already I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and we'll let our listeners know, is that you're actually going back to Europe because you're going outside of Italy, but you're getting to walk the Portugal version of the Camino de Santiago.
Yeah, the Way of St. James. So that'll be an interesting experience. Not sure what to expect. You know, I'm out of my territory.
Is that hard for you? And you're going with, I was originally supposed to go. My daughter's going to get married, so I had to back out. And you asked me the other day if I was sad, or your wife asked me. I said, yes. One, because I'm not going. Two, because I don't like going back on my word. I'm usually a man of my word, and when I commit to something, I follow through with it. It just, I got a daughter graduating college. I got a daughter getting married. We were in Italy 2 weeks ago. Take another 3 weeks. From a budget standpoint, a time standpoint, it just wasn't adding up. But you're going actually with one of my friends who you don't know that well. And I said, hey, Pat's kind of nervous. And then I got to thinking, you and I have traveled so much internationally together. I go, I think you would be less nervous if I was going. You and I are kind of like a crutch for one another.
That's true. Yeah, we know exactly what we're going to do in those situations.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it kind of helps me kind of relate to the people that listen to these podcasts, because you know, you and I know Florence, and we know people. We really want to introduce it to people,
yeah.
And they're nervous. But I'm out of my element, and I'm going to go just be vulnerable and walk the Camino.
I like how you use the word vulnerable. I give Pat a hard time about vulnerability a lot, but it was really great to hear Rebecca say she listened to the podcast before she even met us, because you realize how much people connect on either podcast or videos. You've done it yourself with the Camino. And even when we get ready to go to Florence, you're always looking for something new, looking for different experiences. And you do that through video. You do that through podcast.
Yeah. It's really, really neat meeting these people and having these connections. I'll never forget our experience in Formaggio Teca.
No. Either will I. And that's why I think the next time we do something every time we get to Florence. I always do the aperitivo tour with Linda Sorgiovanni from Italy Customized, because you went on that for the first time.
Oh, she's amazing.
Linda is absolutely amazing. And I highly recommend that, especially like your first night in Florence. To do the aperitivo tour with Linda is something that is just a good way to kick off your experience. And then the next day, you go to Formaggio Tecatoire and you sit and have a bottle of wine. You have some incredible cheese. And hopefully Rebecca's at the shop and you'll go, hey, I heard, don't go, hey, I saw you on Fixer to Fabulous. Go, I heard you on the Total Tuscany podcast.
Oh, that would make us happy.
That would make us happy. Don't go to the TV show first. Yeah. Go to the podcast first. So make sure to follow Total Tuscany on the social media pages. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. And, of course, if you have any questions for Pat or myself, you can always send us an email, totaltuscany@gmail.com. If you have any podcast suggestions, you can also email those to us, because we're always looking to share new experiences and let people hear about them. So if you have any suggestions, please feel free to email us those, and we'll try to make a connection there. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. We will talk to you next time on the Total Tuscany Podcast.